You are listening to POCC Black Report Radio or www.blackreportradio.com. And today we have political musician Boots from the rap group The Cool interviewing political prisoner and prolific revolutionary journalist Mumia Abu-Jamal.
Hello.
Hello, hello.
Oh, wow. This is Boots Riley from The Cool. It's an honor to meet you, sir.
The honor is mine, brother.
There are a few things that I've always wanted to ask you.
Sure not.
In my music, a lot of times I've been accused of dealing with things that seem more personal than political, although I see them as very political. I try to deal with that piece that gets people to move to action, where the system interacts with people in their personal lives. What is it that separates you and I and other folks that consider themselves part of a movement from the masses of other folks who don't consider themselves part of that movement?
Well, actually, very little. I mean, I remember hearing, and this is in another context, but I remember hearing a boxing trainer say that the difference between champs and those who are not champs can be measured in inches, not feet. And I always was impressed by that. I mean, we think of champs as these great, great, great creatures. The fact of the matter is it is really very little between those of us who consider ourselves activists or revolutionaries and those who are not. It often turns on one's personal experience. Remember, you mentioned the personal in terms of what you put into your music. But I assure you, there is an intersection between the personal and the political. And how people were raised, when they were raised, and their experiences influences how they see the world. I mean, it could not be otherwise. If Huey P. Newton didn't have the background he had in the street, he was a thief, you know. If Malcolm didn't have his background in the street, you know, he was a pimp and a burglar. They would not have been put in the position where they had to question what they were doing in the world and how they could change
this
themselves.
This call is from the State Correctional Institution at Green and is subject to monitoring and recording.
And how they could change themselves into political people. You know, Malcolm's transformation began in the prison in Massachusetts. Huey's began really in the streets. I mean, he used to write about how he'd get busted for a theft or something like that, and he would go to court. But because he had studied the law somewhat, he saw what was happening in court, and he internalized it, and he began challenging it, and he began, like, representing himself and stuff. So there is a thin line, a very thin line, between those of us who are political and those of us who are not. And events sometimes change people in the, literally, in the snap, in the blink of an eye. You know, Mao used to say, a single spark can start a prairie fire. He meant the spark in the mind, you know, the insight, the realization, you know. And that's why I say there are millions of Malcolms. They just don't know it yet.
All right. Going along those same lines, many times when I've been involved with various organizations or even doing the music that I do, I've heard this comment, which is one that cuts to the core of me from just people in my neighborhood or whatever, is, you know, I really like what you're doing, but, you know, I got to pay the bills. It has always often caused me to think that possibly that the movement in general doesn't have its finger on the pulse of the people, because it seems that people should say, I need to be involved in the movement because I got to pay the bills.
Well, I would agree with that, but I would even take it a step further. The fact that people have to expend more and more of what little and little they have on paying the bills, on buying gas, on buying food, on paying the rent, more and more now, is because more and more people are not involved in the movement. Let me explain. Almost all of us who work in the world, especially those of us who have 9-to-5s, if such a thing exists anymore, they have those jobs. They have those 9-to-5s because 40, 50, 60, 70 years ago, people organized something called unions and fought for 40-hour weeks. If they had not done that, the norm would have been 80 hours. I mean, they used to have children working in factories, babies. You know what I'm saying? If people did not organize and say, hold it, then, you know, I mean, weren't they working to pay the rent? Weren't they working to, you know, to pay their bills? But they were also organizing to make the day better and lives better for their children and people coming after them. And you better believe if people were really politically and economically organizing, they could demand that the speculation be taken out of the oil prices, and it instead of $4 or $5 soon a gallon, it would be what it should be, $2.70, or $52 a barrel instead of $135 a barrel. People forget that when the Iraq war started, oil was $30 a barrel. Now it's $135. The last I checked, it might be $138 today. But it's like that because people essentially did, while people did protest against this war, many people, after it started, went back home. They said, well, we can't demonstrate in a time of war. It's un-American. Well, damn it, if they had organized more, if they had continued fighting, then, you know, we would be closer to ending this war as opposed to changing the management of the war so that it continues on and on and on, or goes to another place, or they bomb Iran next week, or, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, definitely. And I think that's kind of the thought that I was having, is that the union movements that we see now, they're definitely not revolutionary or radical. There are some really good people trying to do things in that. Do you think that people that do consider themselves revolutionaries or radicals or progressive, more of them need to get involved in some issues that have to do with labor or economics on the grassroots level?
I do. And, I mean, that might mean joining a trade union. That might mean just organizing among trade unionists and union members. But, yeah, you know, in order to make this thing happen, in order to change society, all factors of society must be, you know, organized and touched and moved and motivated. You see, if it doesn't happen that way, then there'll be increasingly smaller groups of people involved in organizations, and they'll be less and less influential. When people organized those union things that I talked about, they did it because their lives were hell. And they also did it, if you think back and if you check back, the Supreme Court said criminal syndicalism or syndicalization. The Supreme Court criminalized unionization, saying it was a burden on production and a burden on business and the private property of corporations. It took millions and millions of people organizing all around the country to change that into the kind of normalization that we now think of unions as just a background noise. It's a normal thing. It's not extraordinary. And instead of what they could be, they're much better than they were. They can be much, much better. But it's going to take, you know, a change in consciousness among union people and among organizers to work together and work outside of the realm of work and in the area of culture, for example. I mean, we cannot underestimate the power of culture in a society where entertainment is one of the biggest industries in this country, in the world, really, you see, because that's where people hear things. That's where their minds are changed. Think of the impact of a Bob Marley, for example.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of culture,
this call is from the State Correctional Institution at Green and is subject to monitoring and recording.
You and Comandante Marcos are two of the most beautiful and right on writers that I read to break down how society works.
Thank you, brother.
And who are some of your favorite writers?
I have a lot because, you know, given this situation, I read a lot. But, you know, I've found that some of Huey's early stuff is, and it hasn't been really read even by former members of the party. Huey was brilliant. He truly was brilliant. There's an old head, a West Indian, no longer among us, but he wrote some really, really deep stuff. His name is C.L.R. James. He was from Trinidad. This brother was brilliant. I mean, because, you know, he was a scholar, a thinker and all that, but he was also an organizer, a revolutionary, you know, and a political figure, a thinker, a writer. And one of his greatest collections of interviews and speeches was something called Every Cook Can Govern, where he analyzes the world, and he's just a brilliant cat. So I read a great deal, And a lot of people have influenced me in different ways. Eldridge, you know, I was a teenager when I first got turned on to Eldridge. Eldridge was a very, very powerful and brilliant writer who influenced me deeply when I was a kid. And I still have that influence with me today.
What do you think about the Supreme Court decision that people in Guantanamo get to see a judge?
You know what's most amazing about that, Boots? That four members of the court said, no, they don't. You know, I mean, I am surprised pleasantly that five members of the court said that they need, that the Constitution covers them because they're under the jurisdiction of the United States of America, okay? So there has to be some kind of hearing or the availability of habeas corpus in federal court. But four justices, including the Chief Justice, said, no, they don't. And, you know, when you think about that, that should astound people. You know, in the space of 7-8 years, in addition to Guantanamo, you have so-called black sites, secret prisons. You have legalized, for all intents and purposes, torture. And there are other prisons that we don't even talk about, called Diego Garcia and others around the world, where people are tortured in the name of America. And the fact that more people aren't, you know what's most amazing about that, Boots? That four members of the court said, no, they don't. You know, I mean, I am surprised pleasantly that five members of the court said that they need, that the Constitution covers them because they're under the jurisdiction of the United States of America, okay? So there has to be some kind of hearing or the availability of habeas corpus in federal court. But four justices, including the Chief Justice, said, no, they don't. And, you know, when you think about that, that should astound people. You know, in the space of 7-8 years, in addition to Guantanamo, you have so-called black sites, secret prisons. You have legalized, for all intents and purposes, torture. And there are other prisons that we don't even talk about, called Diego Garcia and others around the world, where people are tortured in the name of America. And the fact that more people aren't crazy about it or making noise about it or demonstrating in the streets about it is stunning. And it shows you how repression really does close down the minds of people, because people must be paralyzed by fear instead of energized by indignation to say, this is not my country, this is not the country I want, this is not, you know, the world I want to live in. Now, we know as African Americans that, you know, America has rarely, if ever, followed its own constitution. I mean, it'd be a good idea if they did that. They certainly violated for centuries when it comes to African Americans. It doesn't even matter what the Constitution says. They passed the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendment and then said, in so many words, this applies to everybody, corporations, but not niggers, you see, and denied black people for 100 years the rights enshrined in the Constitution. But it took,
you have 60 seconds remaining.
It took people organizing in the street all across the South and in the North to change those words into reality. On the move. Good to hear you, Boots.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And it's an honor to speak to you.
The honor is mine, brother. Keep doing what you're doing, because you're doing some real beautiful stuff.
Oh, wow. I'm glad you even know who I am. Thank you very much.
I read about you in the Bayview. I saw your interview. It was all that.
All right.
Thank you, brother.
All right. Okay.
On the move.
Thank you. Peace.
You were just listening to the voice of political prisoner and prolific revolutionary journalist, Mumi Abu-Jamal, as he was being interviewed by political musician Boots from the rap group The Coup, as an example of the Prisoners of Conscience Committee's motto, One Prisoner, One Contact. This segment was produced by the POCC Minister of Information, J.R., for www.blockreportradio.com. Free them all.